Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by Bet Online. And while we normally don't cry over spilled milk on this fine podcast, I feel like we need to rehash something that happened last weekend. I, of course, am your host, Todd Furman. You can follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman, and joined by the incomparable Payne Insider. Payne, have we officially gotten over the Justin Rose collapse on Sunday at the Masters?
By about Tuesday afternoon, I was good.
I mean, it's not often that a sport that we don't handicap all that religiously by any stretch of the imagination. You have a more than live flyer at 22-1. I think at the top of the market, we were talking about Rose as a 1-8 favorite to take home the green jacket. Was not able to close it out, but almost like a prophetic tweet you sent me earlier in the day before the round had even started. Well, if Rose can't get us the money today, I at least hope Sergio Garcia wins the damn thing.
I'm putting on chapstick right now, but let me give you my thoughts on that. a win is a win. I will say this. We got there, you know, fading Willett in the Charlie Hoffman matchup thanks to Sherman. We got the top 20 finish of Justin Rose. So the two full positions were good to go there. The partial position on the 22-1 shot would have been nice, obviously. It's about a $36,000 swing with Sergio coming from behind. So I didn't hedge in live wagering like an idiot. I actually saw he was down two strokes going into 14. There was some plus 925 available. And you just look, like, Rose had done very well in the back nine the entire tournament. Sergio was doing most of his damage on the front nine. And then you see the Sergio implosion that we're all expecting on 10 and 11. And you just thought it was kind of foregone that Mr. Consistent Justin Rose would keep that two-stroke lead versus a guy that we've seen, you know, really, you know, melt like a snow cone on a hot summer day in the previous 73 majors. So it was a tough break, but a profitable majors. So anytime I think that we can make money on a sport that we don't invest a ton of time into is positive.
No, definitely the case. Hopefully our Bet the Board listeners profited from it, and can't thank our special guests, Will Gray and Jeff Sherman, for all the insight and analysis they provided there to keep people engaged through Sunday. Unfortunately, no special guests lined up aside from Dave Mason for today's podcast, Payne. And since you know the NBA isn't quite my bread and butter, you get to do the heavy lifting, although a lot of people who've listened to this podcast for 3+ years say that that's no different than what we do over the course of football season anyways.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do. Hopefully give some stuff out here.
Thoughts, I guess, before we get into the playoff stuff, thoughts on the MVP race? I mean, we know that prominent radio hosts have said that, you know, LeBron James most deserving. We know he's not going to take home the hardware when you look at the odds. Bet Online had, you know, no more than a few weeks ago, James Harden listed as a 1-2 favorite. Obviously, Russell Westbrook moved into the catbird seat with his strong finish. Do we think it's just a formality with him breaking Oscar Robertson's triple-double record, among other things, that it's Russell Westbrook's award, or should we be preparing ourselves for a bit of a surprise?
It's Westbrook's award. Not that I agree with that, but that's who's going to win it. And you can't really...
Who would you give it to? Or who would you give it to?
It's easy. I mean, it's LeBron. Like, we've gotten to a stage where we just take this guy for granted. Like, it's just ridiculous. Like, you just look at the numbers when he's on the court versus off the court. It's staggering. Like, I mean, the Cleveland Cavaliers become the New York Knicks when he's off the court. It's remarkable. And we just take him for granted. You know, like, the guy's 32 years old. It just seems like he keeps getting better.
I mean, the amount of mileage he's put on those legs, when you talk about constant runs to the finals, doing double duty throughout the course of summers, playing for Team USA, it's clearly amazing that his body hasn't broken down further. And the fact that he has to draw all the criticism from folks taking shots about him resting throughout the regular season never ceases to amaze me.
I'll say this. So, like, when you look at a lot of the guys that are up for the award, Kawhi Leonard, you know, the popular choice among the analytic guys, they like what he does on defense. it dwarfs, obviously, both Westbrook and Harden. And there are two ends to the court. When you talk about a guy that, you know, probably should be getting mentioned, but he's not because he had an injury and he played about 60 games, is CP3. What he did when he was on the court this year, if you look at some of the numbers, even better than LeBron. So, but Westbrook did have that similar effect on the court versus off the court. There was clearly some stat stuffing going on, and a lot of it by design. You know, his rebounding numbers, if you look at a lot of things or just watch the game, was aided by not closing out on his man when shooting. You know, Westbrook had the lowest shot contest mark in the NBA. He'd literally play off his man, allow him to shoot, and then jet to the glass. And then on free throws, he'd be in that, like, three position that's supposed to box out the shooter. But the bigs would kind of bully their man and let him reign free to grab the rebound. So, yes, a lot of that was to get him out in transition quicker. But a lot of it was literally just padding the stats. And so his rebound numbers went up, but the team's rebound numbers actually, like, went down. Last year, I think they had one of the most historic rebounding seasons in the NBA. So they went down as a team, although he went up because of this design.
Hey, everyone is out there to try and line their own pockets, and sometimes when you have to put asses in the seats, the Oklahoma City Thunder clearly had this in mind with Kevin Durant bolting for Golden State. Westbrook puts together the historic season, and like you said, stat stuffing will get you so far, but can we make the claim that this team doesn't accomplish anything that they were able to do if he's not out there for the Thunder?
No, absolutely. I mean, you look at the on-court, off-court numbers. They're right there. I mean, they're way below LeBron, obviously, but, you know, it's significant. I think it's more the fit that's the issue. I do think there's some players there. Like, Enes Kanter obviously can't guard a chair, but he's fantastic offensively. Oladipo is a nice piece, and we'll get to the series between them and Houston later on, and I just think, you know, the fit of the players is probably better in Houston, but it's not like he doesn't have anybody. So, and I don't think the West is as loaded as people think. We've kind of seen that, you know, the last few years, the East really evens things out. It's not just this layup for the top teams anymore in the East, and that this West is this, you know, tough, tough conference anymore.
It's definitely changed the balance of power. Obviously, want to get your thoughts on philosophies on betting the NBA playoffs versus the regular season, and we'll break down the games themselves. But before we do that, Payne, let's get the sportsbook perspective on the NBA playoffs. For the sportsbook perspective, we welcome in Dave Mason, as we do almost every podcast around these parts. You can always follow Dave on Twitter at DaveMasonBOL. And Dave, I guess the first question I have for you, how important are the NBA playoffs to sportsbook volumes this time of year? We know what the NFL means. We know what the NCAA tournament means. But come springtime, how important is the NBA?
Well, it's very important because, for one, numbers do go up. You know, there's a lot more action. There might not be as many games, obviously, but the action on these games is a lot better. So, you know, let's compare a typical NBA game this weekend is going to have probably, you know, on average, I'd say 40 to 50% more action than a nationally televised NBA regular season game. So the action does go up. And like you said, I mean, it's, you know, we start to head into the quote unquote slow season now. Football is over. March Madness is over. So this takes center stage. So it's the priority now. It might not be as good as big as those other events, but it's right. It's close enough, and it is our priority, and it keeps people betting until, you know, June, and then, you know, July's the drag. That July's the real slow season when you pretty much got baseball and one-off golf events and stuff like that. So now it's very good.
Now, I'd be remiss around here. Payne knows I'm a big hockey fan. I think I already know the answer, but I feel like I have to ask the question anyways. The Stanley Cup playoffs move the needle at all for you guys, or is that more or less an afterthought?
Yeah, it definitely moves the needle. Every little bit counts, man. I mean, snooker moves the needle for us, but every little bit counts. But, no, it's definitely a step down from the NBA, right? We see good action on NHL. I mean, we have those reduced juice odds too that we give our players. So that sends a little extra action our way as well. Again, And with the playoffs, that starts heating it up, man. You start looking at the action on the later playoff games, and it's up there more than a regular season NBA game. So, that's on national television. There's only one or two games a night. I'm talking a little bit later in the playoff. People are betting that, and people want to bet. People want to get down. So there's not a lot else going on. You know, a couple NBA playoff games, a couple NHL playoff games, then yeah, there's going to be action on it.
Mason, back to a real sport here.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Firing shots. I knew that was coming.
When we talk about the NBA playoffs at increased volume, we know players like to risk a little to win a lot. How are the futures at BetOnline? Any liabilities materializing for you guys?
Well, for NBA, we're looking great. The top bet counts are the big three, the Cavaliers, Warriors, and Spurs. No surprise there. But that doesn't mean, there are liabilities at all. We only have one liability. Our guys did a real good job managing the book here, which is the Blazers, as you say, the long shot, right? They're a decent-sized liability. Besides that, we're in the positive everywhere. The Rockets are pretty much a break even. We win a little bit. But everybody else, we're looking good. NHL, on the other hand, that's a different conversation. We're in the red on a few teams and a few of the favorites as well. Blackhawks, Caps, Blues is a liability as well. The biggest bet counts are the Caps, Blackhawks, and Rangers. So, NBA, we're looking great. I mean, awesome. NHL is a little bit of a sweat, it looks like it's going to be, but we'll take a great NBA over NHL sweat any day. So,
who knew Damian Lillard can move the needle so much with his proclamation that the Blazers would beat the Warriors in six games? Have to imagine, Dave, you guys are pretty comfortable with the Blazers being the only real liability in the NBA futures market. Well, when we look at some of the series bets and some of the prop offerings, what can a lot of our Bet the Board listeners expect you guys to hang each and every round at BetOnline?
Yeah, exact games, series games, whatever, Blazers and four, et cetera, every combination you can think of. Also got to mention, it's not a prop, but the game odds, we released them before anybody. Yesterday morning we released the first games before anybody, so they hit the board. You can get great value on those. If we're off by a half point or a point, that's outstanding value. Once in a while, a little bit more. So never miss the early odds for the tomorrow's games. Just bunch of player props. They're going up today. I'm hitting up the guys right now about some Russell Westbrook's triple-double stuff. That'll be a lot of fun. That'll get a lot of action. We offered that throughout the season. Will we get a triple-double tonight? And we got a ton of action on those when we offered them. So we'll get some Russell Westbrook stuff up there. All sorts of player props, series props, et cetera, every day.
And we know you guys always hang some of the most generous promotions in the industry. What kind of things can players expect, whether they're looking to reload those accounts to get into action for the NBA playoffs or are first-time customers with BetOnline?
Yes, sir. Head on over to betonline.ag. If you do not have an account, sign up for one. It'll only take a couple minutes. Use promo code 75BTB, that's 75BTB, for a first-ever deposit bonus of 75%. Max bonus is $1,000. If you already have a BetOnline account and you've not taken advantage of the reload bonus yet, use promo code 35BTB for a one-time 35% reload bonus. And again, the maximum bonus there is $1,000. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
Dave, can't thank you enough for jumping on with us today. I know it is a busy time of year, so best of luck with some of the NBA and NHL. We know we'll have you on again here in a couple weeks, and that's why you're one of the best in the business, my friend.
Thanks, fellas. Have a good weekend.
Always interesting to hear about where some of the liabilities are in the futures market. I know Damian Lillard, some pretty strong words as we spoke about, but can't imagine that the folks at BetOnline Payne are all that worried about the Portland Trail Blazers really taking home the Larry O'Brien trophy at those long odds.
No. Especially if Nurkic isn't playing. That's going to be, pretty quick series if he's not close to form. We'll talk about that game in greater detail, but I think I saw they were 0-4 this year and lost by an average of roughly 19.5 a game. So that's really not a series if Nurkic is out.
Not exactly a recipe for success. You talk about the Nurkic injury, and we'll get to all the series in a little greater level of detail. But for you, someone who follows the sport game in, game out, from start to finish, what are the biggest storylines as we head into the postseason?
Honestly, I don't think there is one. It's all this MVP talk, which is absolute garbage. Like, it drives me bonkers. Like, I was looking around the internet, and obviously, you know, you have the hot take guys, and they have, you know, a new take or a new storyline on the NBA every single day, but it's nothing but MVP talk. That's, like, fueled conversation in social media for, like, 2 weeks now. And it's, I mean, this has been a fantastic NBA season. It really has. And if you're not an NBA fan, and I get it to some extent, but this is a great season that's gone on, especially when you talk about four or five guys that are absolutely elite. And you have another, I think this was the first season where 25 guys finished with 25 points or more averaging. So there's a lot of top-end talent this year. But there isn't really any storyline. Like, LeBron doesn't have any pressure on him. Like, he's already got the award. He's already got, you know, he's won in Cleveland. Like, there's just no pressure there. The pressure is really on Kevin Durant. I think that's basically what this comes down to. But for me, there's really no storyline this year.
Yeah, and you mentioned LeBron and Kevin Durant. We know the three-headed monster that are overwhelming favorites to at least be there when the dust finally settles. The Warriors right now a 1-2 favorite at BetOnline. The Cavaliers behind them at 3-1, and you're looking at the San Antonio Spurs, which we'll call, I guess, a proverbial long shot at 7-1 to win the NBA title. Not sure anybody comes from off the pace to really contend with those guys. But when we look at some of the teams in the rest of the field, the Boston Celtics, 16-1. The Houston Rockets, 16-1. Clippers, Wizards, 33-1. And the Raptors at 40-1. Payne, is the kind of year that you feel it's even worth taking a shot on somebody else to dethrone Cleveland in the East or Golden State in the West?
Certainly not fading Golden State in the West. Maybe the Rockets. But I have seen very, very sharp money with two futures on the Wizards and the Raptors. And you could have gotten the Raptors at one point to win the East, like 11-1. That's very sharp. And it's you either have to hate Cleveland. That's kind of the key to this. It's the guys that are just so focused on the defensive end of the court that they're taking the flyer on the Raptors and the Wizards. So those are the two things that I've seen in terms of not betting the favorites.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those things, and we've seen chalk kind of dominate the NBA in recent memory that it doesn't always offer ample opportunity.
Isn't it always like that? Advantage.
Yeah, I mean, like, other than, I mean, I'm trying to think of a team that really surprises.
It's kind of that correlation to, like, you know, the office pools for March Madness, and we kind of had that disclaimer on that podcast. It's like, we all want the upset. We all like the upset other than, like, you know, the ratings guys.
But well, you could
there,
add, I mean,
there you had two number ones in the championship. Like, number ones get there. I think what was it, 22 out of the last 33 years, a one seed has won the NBA Finals.
And when we look at it, though, I mean, a couple of years ago, Golden State, what? You could have had them at 20-1 to win the NBA championship before they kind of burst onto the scene?
Yeah, it was maybe a little bit higher around there, yeah.
And then, probably before then, I'd have to go back to the Dallas Mavericks when Dirk led them against the Shaquille O'Neal-led Heat. Probably the only time in recent memory.
What a great championship that was.
In recent time that I remember teams of prices of 15-1 or higher cutting down the net. So not exactly when you're looking to get rich betting into the futures market, as you mentioned. Chalk tends to dominate. And I guess that leads a perfect segue into the other question I have for you. How much does your philosophy change when you're looking to bet the NBA postseason versus what you're doing game in, game out during the regular season?
It changes. You know, I think using a visual example that's probably easy. I'm a visual learner kind of guy. I don't like to read print, as you know.
oh, I know. You've made that abundantly clear in this podcast a number of times.
I think the visual example is the betting screen, you know, where you saw numbers not posted yesterday until about 3 p.m., say, standard across the board. And you'd think, right, like, hey, most of these series we knew weeks ago, especially in the West, bookmakers had 82 games to kind of grasp, you know, have a grasp on these teams. Why aren't lines up and series prices out immediately? If you're doing this right, you have to readjust your numbers on minutes projections for the playoffs. And sometimes there's a history to support that educated projection. We've seen, you know, a guy like Kawhi Leonard, I think in 11-12, went from like 31 minutes a game to 37 minutes in the playoffs. But the rotations shrink. Teams go to 7-8 guys when there's not blowouts. The player that's averaging, you know, 6 minutes a night, that's below average in a player efficiency metrics, he gets completely booted from the rotation, and suddenly your best player goes from, you know, 33 minutes a night to 39 minutes a night. So that's got to be compensated for, and in some drastic scenarios, you know, you can improve a team anywhere from half a point to I've seen as much as a point and a half when you start to factor in and weed out some of those guys. Like the Milwaukee Bucks, have you seen what they've done? They like signed Gary Payton II, you know, a couple weeks ago. He's playing like 16.
Good for him getting out of the D League. Good for him getting out of the D League.
He's played like average like 16 and a half minutes a night, and his player efficiency metric is like 5. It's under 5. Like the average player in the NBA is 15. So like, you know, the Greek Freak's going to start getting some of those minutes, and he's one of the best players in the league. So, like, you know, you got to throw out some of those noise in the overall season statistics and metrics.
And I think that's valuable advice for folks that, you know, want to try and take the full body of work, how different things really are when we talk about the NBA playoffs. And I guess as we go through some of these series, Payne, and it's up to you, should we go conference by conference? Do we want to go in chronological order when we kind of offer some game capsules and more or less run through the rotation, starting with the early game on Saturday into the nightcap come Sunday?
Does not matter. Let's All right. look at this. What are we looking at? We're looking at the Don Best screen here.
Start with
series? Why don't we want to go by series in order of what they did?
We go by series in terms of when these things will get tipped off. So for folks that are listening to this podcast, they have a chance to fast forward a little bit if they happen to miss some of the Saturday analysis. Just but we want to be around. Comprehensive around here.
It doesn't matter. I figured, you know, I would give you a nice little pat on the back and say, hey, we can start with the Western Conference teams. Believe it or
not, we're not. We're not.
The West Coast is part of the country.
We're such an ass. All right, we're starting in order. We're starting with the first series that'll tip off on Saturday, where the Cleveland Cavaliers play host to the Indiana Pacers. Right now at BetOnline, your game one number, Cleveland an 8.5-point favorite. Total in the game, 212.5. And as we look at the series price, Cleveland an overwhelming 1-10 favorite. Take back 7.25 if you want to back the Pacers here. And I guess the first question that's on everybody's mind, how much has the profile, if at all, and I think I know this answer, changed regarding the Cleveland Cavaliers since the All-Star break?
Yeah, defense. That's it. You know, since the All-Star break, they're 30th in defensive efficiency. And so that scares the heck out of a lot of the professional bettors. To me...
Is that just energy and intensity? I mean, resting on that side of the court?
I would say that to a certain extent. There's, you know, at this point, LeBron's 32, and yes, there was a stretch where they played 5 games in 8 nights, and he literally averaged like 43 minutes a night. It was banana land. But he plays when he wants to play, and we saw this the other night. He literally went into Boston and just smacked them around. And it didn't matter what position. There was some early foul trouble from Tristan Thompson that game. So he went down and basically played center and just manhandled Al Horford in his perfectly manicured eyebrows. And it was just like, it just didn't matter. He was just decided to play that game. And so that's kind of the thing. We've seen what Cleveland can do at their peak. Now, have they been there? They've won the championship, you know, weight off their shoulders. Is that drive there? I don't know. But I think, you know, this series is going to be pretty easy.
I mean, Tristan Thompson has a potential marriage proposal staring him in the eye, so you have to wonder if that's a off-court distraction.
What happens there?
I have no idea. I mean, I won't claim to keep up on NBA.
Is that your kind of girl?
No, not exactly in my wheelhouse. Given my recent dating past, and if you go back through the annals of history, Miss Kardashian would not fall into my wheelhouse.
The fake butt, no good.
Yeah, not exactly the look I'd be after. And okay. The baggage she carries with her, not just in the trunk, but everything else.
I got
so, you know, have to defer there. When we look at the Pacers on the other side, we obviously know Paul George most likely playing his final games with the team if he explores some of the other options. Jeff Teague dealing with a bit of an ankle injury. Do we think that plays a factor? Or since we believe Cleveland, it's a formality, maybe wins a series in 5 or 6, that not even worth factoring that potential injury into how he handicaps some of these games?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the ankle is a big hindrance for Teague. For me, though, you know, Paul George, 1 foot out the door, he said he wants to basically go back home. Is that the West Coast? I can't believe anybody would say that, but yeah.
Hey, I mean, he's the proud product of Fresno State, so moving to L.A. to play for the Lakers would be an upgrade. Now, if the Sacramento Kings could find a way to bring him back to the Valley, are there enough balls to go around for Westbrook and Paul George to both be on that Lakers roster?
It's interesting. I mean, they'd have to figure it out, but I don't love any of their young guys there right now. I know all like the Laker fans are like, man, we had a bunch of young studs. Like,
I don't think there's a whole lot to be excited about or optimistic.
And they're good players. They could be good players. I don't think any of them are going to be
role players, not superstars.
I mean, it's early. Too early to tell that. But Randall, yeah, like he's a beast, but he's a little undersized. He doesn't really space the floor that well. So Ingram, I don't know, maybe. I think they've got some guys there, but they definitely have to go spend some bucks in free agency and not on the Luol Dangs of the world.
Timothy Mozgov, baby. Come on now.
Gotta bring in that veteran presence for the chemistry in the locker room.
Franchise-changing talent there. Cavaliers, Pacers, Cleveland won the season series 3-1, 2-2 against the number. But no surprise here that we both think Cleveland moves on, and they do so comfortably. Milwaukee, Toronto, the second series that'll get underway on Saturday. The Raptors 3-1 straight up and against the spread in the four games earlier this season. The Bucks enter this series with the longest playoff drought in the entire league, having won a postseason series going all the way back to 2000 and 2001. Don't ask me who was on that roster back then because I'm not quite sure I'd be able to answer that question. Toronto finished like a house on fire, 12-2 straight up down the stretch, obviously aided by the return of Kyle Lowry. You're looking at the Raptors, a 7-point favorite for game one. Total on this one, 201 at BetOnline. And as we look at the series price, Toronto, a modest 385 chalk. Take back 3.25 at BetOnline if you want to back the Bucks. Payne, how do you see this series unfolding?
I mean, I think you just did a pretty good job there. That was good. You've prepared for this thing.
I mean, I had to come in and not look like a complete and total stumbling utter idiot when it comes to the NBA, since I don't pay that much attention to it. And you know where my attention's been each of the last two nights, glued to the NHL playoffs, obviously.
I haven't watched a minute. I got to get into it tonight with Pittsburgh. That's kind of...
I mean, your team is defending the Stanley Cup. I figured you'd be into it by now.
Yeah, I saw Letang was out, and that kind of put a damper on things.
You like what we did there, talking a little Stanley Cup when we talked about the Raptors?
Well, that's...
I feel like we're getting good at this podcast thing.
Yeah. So the Raptors are obviously, I don't even want to say surprise team, but the sharp guys love them. And I think Kyle Lowry being out helped. He finally got some rest. We saw him wear down last year in the playoffs. And so he came in, first game back, played significant minutes. He had the wrist injury, so he was able to keep in shape with the cardio. Durant, you know, kind of the comparison's sake, Durant has looked good. I'm shocked that, you know, with the leg injury, he was able to keep in shape. But cardio is key here. So Lowry's got his legs under him. I just think this is a team that's poised to make a little run here. You have to like their backcourt. They are passing the ball much better. I like what they have here matchup-wise if they were to play Cleveland. You have the guards. You have some big men that can contest LeBron in the lane but also do some damage on the offensive end. I just like this Raptors team. So, it's a nice story with the Bucks. Love the Greek Freak. They're going to have some passion and energy, obviously, coming into the playoffs for the first time, as you mentioned, in a long while. We just really like the Raptors.
When we look at this series, and I guess, you know, we figure the Toronto moves on. I mean, not really going out on a limb there, given the current series price. What kind of pieces do you think the Bucks need to be more competitive and to surround the Greek Freak with a little bit more talent to make them a second-tier team in the Eastern Conference going forward?
And he's got to be your horse, obviously, and he's been that. And he's just still so young, so I think he's only scratching the surface. You know, you look at some of these numbers. He was the first player in NBA history to finish a season top 20 in points, rebounds, assists, blocks, and steals. You've had some unfortunate injuries to some of the guys there. I like Brogdon, I think. Dellavedova was kind of just a mess of a signing. But I think Brogdon can help. He's had a good season. One funny thing, and it seems like a good guy. I guess they went to him, the Bucks, and said, hey, we're going to spend like $50,000 over the next 12 days to market and promote your rookie of the year status. And he said, hey, don't do that. Just donate it to a charity. But that was interesting to see how much money they were spending. And it just seems like a good guy. So I think they need a big. not in love with Thon Maker. I don't really know what he is, but they need a big, they need another wing. They need a guy that can space the floor a little bit. Middleton had the tough injury coming in with the hamstring. He came back sooner than most people thought. They thought he could be out for the season, but if he can knock down the shots, provide some floor spacing, it's going to go a long ways here, but I just think the Raptors are too tough. They're playing really well. The key for the Raptors is continue to move the ball. Sometimes it sticks with Lowry and DeRozan. We've seen that last season in the playoffs. But I think those guys are rested right now, and I like their makeup. So not much here for the Bucks, I don't believe. That was a series price that actually got whacked. I know, you know, it seems like a formality here now that you look at them as a $4 favorite, but there was some 360 that opened to the public market that did get hit a little bit, and the numbers that kind of got put out for shaping, there were some spots as low as minus 325 that got, you know, laid pretty quickly and pretty heavily.
And I think it's important to note, not just for this series, but other series as well, professional bettors aren't looking necessarily to gravitate towards an underdog they think has no chance. A lot of these NBA series get underpriced when we talk about some of the favorites coming into things.
Yeah, without question. I mean, you don't have that one game. I don't want to call it a coin flip because there certainly are favorites, but anything can happen in one game, especially in the NBA. It's become perimeter oriented. So, you know, you can have that game where you go 12 for 18 from three and steal a game. But in a seven game series, the best team usually wins most of the time. And there's going to be little instances throughout if you're watching these where it's all about execution. There's film now. They've played each other in the regular season, and then you get a series where you're potentially playing each other seven times. It's all about the adjustments in-game, and it's all about, really, how the players execute. There's only so much coaches can do at this point. It comes down to execution. Now, granted, coaching is huge at this stage, but execution is key. So the game slows down. It becomes a half-court game. Can you execute in the half-court?
And we'll see a lot of these teams make adjustments, whether series go 4, 5, 6, or 7 games. Third game on Saturday at 5 o'clock Pacific time. San Antonio opens up with the Memphis Grizzlies. The Spurs, a 9-point favorite in game 1 at BetOnline. Total on this one, 191. The Spurs, overwhelming 1-10 favorites. Take back 7.25 on the Grizzlies at BOL. Payne, 2-2 straight up. These teams split the season series, but the Grizzlies did sweep in the only category that matters, 4-0 against the number. Three of the four games went under the total. What I found interesting, in the four meetings, only once did a team shoot better than 44% from the floor, but an inconspicuous absence for the Memphis Grizzlies, especially on the defensive end.
I will say this. The Grizzlies are a tough physical team, and I love Conley and Gasol, but there's just nothing else there right now. You see the form they're coming into the playoffs with. Lost 9 of 12 down the stretch, and there's some ugly stuff there. Lakers, Pelicans, Kings, Mavericks, Pistons. They put all their eggs in the Chandler Parsons basket, and I mean, they were all in, not just financially, but the coaches and GMs, like, before the season were talking about Parsons in the, like, I quote, LeBron James role. Yeah, you know, he can do all things, just like LeBron. Every facet of the game. Versatile. This is no knock on Conley because he's fantastic, but when he's the highest paid NBA player in the world, like, you can't spend $22 million on Chandler Parsons, who plays 19 minutes a game. So they have holes everywhere. You know, they're below average at two guard. And I know we talk about Tony Allen potentially being out, and he's great defensively, but he's a below average two guard. He just can't score. I mean, you look at...
Yeah, and it looks by all accounts that Allen will probably be out for the entire series, so...
Vince, he's a tough guy. I don't count him out anything. He's like, he's that dude you want on your team, coming off the bench, playing 15 minutes, giving you that little spark and just kind of beating up guys. You don't have a wing. Your foreman, he's young, but he's below average. So there's this is the interesting thing. Are they going to play Zach Randolph more than 24 minutes a night? He's still an above average NBA player, so he's got to play more than 24 minutes. And maybe they beat up the Spurs when you talk about the Spurs' interior defense. Whether it's Pau Gasol or it's David Lee, there's a reason why Deadman has picked up a lot of the minutes. It's because of that defensive side of the floor. But the Spurs are going to survive in advance here. What the Spurs do moving forward, I'm not really sure. I don't love the guards. But in terms of the Grizzlies, they're just not in form right now. They have too many holes when you're playing a well-balanced team like the Spurs here. So, you know, just kind of pencil the Spurs into your bracket and move on.
Does this series go more than, if I set the over-under at 5.5 games, which way are you going?
5.5 games. That's actually a perfect number. Four, two. Ah, I would go under.
Under?
Yeah.
Spurs move them along in the Western Conference. I don't think it'll come as a surprise to anybody. Be interesting to see how that team projects going forward. Into the Saturday nightcap, where the Clippers will play host to the Utah Jazz. They'll open as a 5-point favorite in game one, total at 200 at BetOnline. At least on paper, one of the more competitive series if you go off of the pricing that we're seeing out there. The Clippers slightly more than 2-to-1 favorites here. Take back $1.85 on the Utah Jazz. Of course, this series in terms of home court advantage came all the way down to the final game of the regular season. Payne, you mentioned how valuable Chris Paul has been to this team. Can we make the case the Clippers are peaking at the right time, having gone 11-2 straight up their last 13? And then more importantly, what matchups intrigue you the most as it pertains to this particular series?
Yeah, it came right down to the wire, and actually the Clippers won the season series 3-1. That ends up being the difference in terms of who plays host. You alluded to this. This is probably one of my favorite series. It's really interesting. The Clippers are flying under the radar. Nobody is talking about them other than like the impending blow-up. Now talks of like Doc being out as well. Do they rally? Do they take the us against the world approach? You would think current form indicates that. Or do they continue to look a little funky with parts that don't quite fit? You know, Blake becoming this long two-point shooter, not driving to the hoop because DeAndre crams up his space. But I keep kind of coming back to this, and regardless of what you think of CP3 and how the Clippers underachieve in the postseason, Los Angeles is outscoring opponents by nearly 20 points per 100 possessions when CP3 is on the floor. This is kind of what I alluded to earlier when you're talking about being on the court, off the court. CP3 has been actually, by those numbers, more impactful than LeBron James. The matchup here that you have to focus on is George Hill. He's Utah's engine, having one of his best seasons. He needs to be 100% healthy. He has to keep the distance in that point guard matchup respectable for them to have a chance.
Anything Utah can do to really push this series, I mean, and flip the power dynamic in their favor?
I like the young nucleus there. Like, George Hill has to be the guy that scores, not just when he's standing open off the jump shot. He's got to create a little bit. He's got to knock that dribble jump shot down to kind of create space. We know, you know, the battle down below is kind of a wash there. I love the Jazz in general. Like, I like this team. They're on the rise. I love Quinn Snyder. I love the story there. You know, like a guy who drinks a little vodka and has some off-the-court issues. I think he's a fantastic coach. And so the key here for the Jazz is just to keep this series close, apply some pressure, and then just hope that it gets into the back of the heads of the Clippers that, hey, here we go again. We're going to underachieve. We don't really get along. There's some internal issues there. And that's the key. Just keep this within distance. That just frustrates the Clippers. And that's the key here. But I do think the Clippers do enough just to get by here. I really like the Jazz, though. I think they're headed in the right direction. They just need one more player.
I have to hope this series can live up to some of the advanced expectations, at least on paper, maybe one of the only ones that could go the distance and take it a full 7 games.
Joe Johnson and Ingles, baby. That's my problem. They rely in the clutch, like down the stretch, on Ingles and Joe Johnson. Like, that just scares me a little bit.
Not exactly the recipe for success, especially in the postseason. We'll put it that way. Sunday, the Wizards and Hawks will kick things off for us on Easter, with the Wizards a 5-point favorite in game one, total 211 at BetOnline. And when we look at the series pricing there, very similar to the Clippers. You're looking at the Wizards minus 210 favorites. Take back $1.80 on the Hawks at BetOnline. You mentioned earlier there was some sharp money that has taken flyers on the Wizards to potentially come out of the East. I guess the perfect question I have for you, should we be buying the Washington Wizards, maybe taking that next step? I know the Hawks struggled for stretches of the season, did win 4 out of 5 to close things out. Season series, Wizards won 3 games to 1. 2-2 against the number, split right down the middle. 3 of 4 games these two teams played came in under the posted total.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what's going on for game one yet, but, you know, as you made mention, the Wizards have taken some very sharp futures money in the market. I like what they're doing. I think Wall's taken that next step. The Hawks are a little... I know how they finished the season, but they were trying to blow this team up. They were trying to trade a lot of their guys. This just kind of feels like, hey, we're here. What's next? Now, Budenholzer's a fantastic coach, so there could be a little advantage there in that regard. But I'm not fading the sharp guys here. That's for certain. I think this is potentially the year the Wizards take that next step. I think the East is wide open. I'm not in love with the Celtics in general, but I think this is just a tough conference. It's going to be a tough matchup, but I don't really love the Hawks. I just don't. They have not perfect fits there by any stretch. What Schroeder are you going to get? Some nights he's extremely efficient. Other nights he just doesn't stop shooting despite being, you know, 5 for 18, and that's kind of the problem here. I think he's got a lot of talent. He's going to be good moving forward. I'm just not quite sure what they are. What are you going to do with Dwight Howard? They seem to play better when he's off the court sometimes, and you get that space and pace play that, you know.
Shocking. Shocking, yeah, teams play better with Dwight Howard not on the court.
Yeah, it's just, it's tough. Like, I just don't, like, it's tough for me to back a team that really wanted to throw in the towel like 2 weeks ago. So that's my issue here.
Makes it tough to go to the window with a ticket on a team that clearly, as you mentioned, may just be playing out the stretch, trying to figure things out, and may be anxiously awaiting their postseason tee time. From them to a team we know exactly what we're going to get, the Golden State Warriors, 14.5-point favorites in Game 1 against the Portland Trail Blazers. Total here, 222.5. The Warriors, 1-70 favorites. Yes, you heard me correctly. Put up $70 to make $1 coming back. But if you believe Damian Lillard, 30-1, awfully handsome return on investment. If you think the Blazers can win this series in 6, it'll get you 150-1, Payne, at BetOnline. We look at the history between these two teams. Warriors swept the season series, only went 2-2 against the number. If we go back to last season in the postseason, last 6 against Portland, they've scored 113 points or more. You hit on it earlier that the injury to Nurkic probably limits any real upside the Blazers have. But I will say one thing. Portland been one of the best bets in the entire NBA since the middle of March. 13-3 against the spread their last 16 games down the stretch. I don't think any of us are going to make a case for the Blazers winning this series, but when we look at the number, series pricing, etc., how do we see this thing unfolding?
It's all about Nurkic. That's the big thing here, obviously, his availability. He's going to get reevaluated here in a few hours. He's dealing with a non-displaced leg fracture. And I tend to value injuries less than most. They're so overstated in most cases, but Nurkic is so important. You know, Portland's 14-6 since trading for him. And looking at the defensive improvements the Blazers have made with him on the court is just staggering. It's a small portion of luck in kind of progressing to the mean. Portland was very unlucky by the metrics. But if you just put this in black and white, with Nurkic on the court, the Blazers' defensive rating is 5th in the league. It was 30th with Plumlee. Opponents' effective field goal percentage with Nurkic on the floor, 5th. It was 26th with Plumlee on the court. And you can do so much more on the offensive end as well. If he's getting singled, he can score in the post. If you double him, he passes well enough to find the McLillard combination, cutting or make that skip pass. Just overall energy and effort is through the roof right now due to that presence of Nurkic. And that's kind of where you can, you know, attack the Warriors a little bit. So if he's not a go, or if he's a shell of himself, this is going to be quick work.
This number that we're seeing, at least for game one, 14.5, very tough to try and, you know, navigate through in your handicap or one of those series. You go, all right, maybe Portland steals a game. They win game 3 at home. But for the most part, we know Golden State's going to advance. And the biggest thing for them will be staying healthy and kind of limiting minutes for their key contributors.
Yeah, I'm not touching. I'm not laying 14.5. It would be potentially a little different scenario here if Nurkic does play, and I get, you know, some word that He's not just out there. So that would change some things a little bit. And I think the total will have a drastic impact as well. I think if he plays, you'll see this total come down a little bit. If he doesn't, it's going to go up a bunch. He's just that important. You know, I can't give too much away, but
no, for
you know,
sure.
those numbers are staggering. Those numbers are, you know, when you're talking about top five in most defensive metrics with Nurkic in there, and them being nearly dead last in every efficiency metric defensively with him not in, I mean, it's massive. I mean, when you're talking about a total like this, it's, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 points. That's serious.
Crazy to talk about one player impacting, you know, both ends of the court in such a context. But as you mentioned, Nurkic clearly a key cog in them rattling off a 14-6 record before that non-displaced fracture. To the Eastern Conference and the final series that'll tip off in the East on Sunday. Chicago on the road at the number one seed Boston Celtics. Boston a 7.5-point favorite for game one. Total 207.5. The Celtics minus 475 at BetOnline to move on to the conference semifinals. If you believe in the long shot Bulls, that'll get you 4-1 return on investment. Payne, I ask you this. Are the Celtics the worst number one seed we can ever remember in either conference?
I don't want to go there. I have a man crush on Brad Stevens, so you know I don't really want to go there. If I do think the Bulls are gonna have a little fight in them, it's probably, if you're a Bulls fan, this is a little bittersweet. You're not gonna compete for a championship, and now you've kind of lost a chance at some ping pong balls. Internally, they've come together late down the stretch, 1-8 of 11. But they've only played three teams with a winning record during that 11-game stretch. Three of those losses were to Brooklyn, the Knicks, and Philly, so that's troubling. They have shown an ability all season, though, to play up to the level of their competition. They did beat the Warriors. Rondo is back, and if you read his quotes, he's pretty motivated at the return.
Relishing the opportunity to return to Boston.
Yeah, and he could help defensively. Providing some resistance to a guy like Isaiah Thomas from driving the ball. And, you know, you look at some of the metrics, despite his, you know, frame and stature, Thomas is number one in the league in drives to the basket per game, nearly 13 attempts. And the Bulls don't defend the paint very well. So Rondo could help in that regard. Now, offensively, this makes things tough because Rondo can't hit that open shot consistently. I would much rather have the ball in the hands of Wade and Butler, bringing the ball up the court, play point guard. And you have to attack Isaiah Thomas each and every single offensive possession down the floor. Thomas can't guard anybody. And when you look at this, out of 86 point guards in defensive real plus minus, Isaiah Thomas is 86th. So this needs to be Butler and Wade bring the ball up the court and immediately attacking. And we've seen that strategy prevail some. I think the split is 2-2 on the regular season. And when you just look at this overall landscape, like, you have the best player on the court in Butler, and you have two championship guys with that championship pedigree in Wade and Rondo. And Butler really hasn't shot overly well in the four matchups. 25 of 69 in the four contests. So, you know, Crowder, Smart, Bradley, that trio of defensive first guys have really made Butler work for it. But despite that, they've split the season series with turmoil. So I don't think this is going to be, now, I'm not saying the Celtics are going to lose the series, but I don't think this is just an absolute walk in the park like a 1-8 would indicate when you factor in a team with turmoil. Now, if we're talking about the Miami Heat here, scary if you're the Celtics. Like, you were, you know, praying to God that the Heat didn't get in there. That was the hottest team in the NBA, 30-11 down the stretch. You know, third in the NBA in defensive efficiency. Like, you did not want to see the Heat here. The Bulls, you're going to get by, but this is going to be a much tougher series than people think.
We can blame the Brooklyn Nets for depriving us of that potential series, resting everybody for the non-existent postseason, the final Wednesday of the season.
You could probably make a case that the Heat were the fourth or fifth best team in the Eastern Conference, and they didn't make the playoffs. Eric Spoelstra just coached his huevos off. Like, it was unbelievable. Guys got injured. And I'm not a Heat fan. I live in Miami. I'm a Knicks fan. I hate the Heat, but it is what it is. Like, that's the reality. He's probably coach of the year, but he's not going to get it.
And it's rare, to say that too in the NBA, that with 16 teams making the playoffs, that one of the teams playing the best basketball and that would have been a difficult out doesn't make the postseason. It just speaks to the coaching job that Spo did, turning around what was a glorified dumpster fire early in the campaign, getting everybody to buy in, unfortunately missing out by the slimmest of margins.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
So from the Eastern Conference that maybe offers more intrigue than what we've seen in years past, to the most intriguing opening round series of all, and they saved it for last come Sunday night, where the Houston Rockets, 7-point favorites in game one, play host to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Total in this game, 228.5 at BetOnline. The Rockets, 375 favorites, take back 315 if you believe Russell Westbrook can put the Thunder on his back. Payne, when we look at the season numbers for these two teams, the Rockets 3-1 straight up, went 3-1 against the spread. What I found most fascinating, 3 of 4 meetings between these two teams decided by 3 points or less.
Yeah, flip a coin. I'm not as down on D'Antoni as like most people are come playoff time, and maybe I'll regret saying that in a week, who knows. But no matter what you think of him, he's changed the game of basketball. And my feeling is if Amari doesn't get suspended for coming off the bench in the playoffs, D'Antoni has his championship and he's getting the credit he deserves. I just think the parts fit better here with Houston. I really do. They've done a fantastic job not going and getting the splash player, but getting guys that kind of fit the mold. And I think over the course of a 7-game series, once you get into the half court, and I think that's got to be the goal here for the Rockets, is force them into the half court. The Thunder's numbers are a little misleading here, and we've talked about why they were potentially stacking some of Westbrook's number, and you can make the case it was to get out in transition. And you look at the Thunder, they're third in the NBA in efficiency transition points, but overall efficiency metrics, there's only about a half point difference between what they do in transition versus what they do in the half court. So I think if the Rockets, I'm going to say this weirdly, slow this down a little bit, make it a half-court game. I just like Harden a little bit better, distributing and having parts that I think fit a little better in a slowed-down game. And I think the Rockets will be smart enough to do that a little bit. The Thunder, probably the better defensive team here, without question. And I've said this a while. Harden's not great defensively, but you've at least seen effort on that end. He can test shots. Like, he's never going to be...
It's a step in the right direction from where he was, you know, the last couple of seasons.
He's never going to be an elite defender, but if he can get to somewhere where he's, like, a point below an average defender, there's been times where he's been actually average metrics-wise. He's at least contesting shots, unlike Russell Westbrook, dead last in shot contest. So, I think the Rockets do enough, and I have a man crush on D'Antoni. So, I just don't think he gets the credit he deserves. I think he's the better coach here, and I think they have the parts that fit better.
Do you worry at all from a point spread perspective that the Rockets' last cover came way back on March 26th, a string of 9 straight where they failed against the number, that maybe odds makers are inflating the tag? Or conversely, do we go the other way and say, well, because of that, maybe the Rockets are a little bit undervalued, especially with the star power that Oklahoma City brings to this series?
The biggest thing that scares me is Harden's wrist. Now, he's not made a fuss about it. In fact, you know, wanted to play games late down the stretch while they were trying to rest him. Now, I think resting him was, you know, the smart thing to do, despite him being in the mix for MVP talk. So that's really the one thing that scares me. I could envision... I think the public is going to like Oklahoma City here. I really do. And I just think this storyline of, like, D'Antoni blowing it in the playoffs. Like, I've heard, like, a lot of radio hosts this week, you know, they're playing, like, flashbacks of, like, what D'Antoni has said in previous post-game pressers after losing in the playoffs, just basically crapping on the guy. I think they do enough here. And I really think if they win this, there's a decent little path to making the Western Conference Finals. I really see that as this plays out, and you're going to have a situation where, you know, you potentially, if you shop, can have a 35-1 year back pocket in the Western Conference Finals. So I think that's, you know, again, that's one of the sharper futures bets that I have seen from professionals. And so I think that makes a lot of sense. I do think if you get past here, you're in the Western Conference Finals, and that future does make some sense.
Well, I mean, it should, as we said, we know the overwhelming favorites, obviously Golden State in the Western Conference, Cleveland in the Eastern Conference, but that doesn't stop professionals from trying to identify some numbers, create some arbitrage situations for them moving deeper into the postseason. You hope a matchup or two unfolds in such a manner, and you put yourself in an expectation and a position to try and make a few bucks. And I think that sometimes is lost to some of the casual bettors and maybe some of our listeners out there who go, well, they don't have any chance to win it. But if you can neutralize the damage and basically buy off two rounds later, you know, why eliminate any opportunity you can to make a few bucks?
Yeah, it's all about earning. You know, that's the big thing. It's, you know, I know people get enamored with the win percentage, but 1-1 in profit is in big profit when you're talking about futures definitely makes some sense. And the key to doing a lot of these is projecting out, you know, what they're going to be each game of a series, projecting out who they are potentially going to play and what those lines would look like to see, you know, what kind of value you're actually getting in the market.
It can be a tough mindset sometimes when you look at your balance sheet, as you say, the win percentage, you go 1-2, but you're actually ending up making a few bucks. So it's a thought process that a lot of folks have trouble grappling with, especially as it pertains to betting underdogs, specifically in baseball season, but definitely makes a whole heck of a lot of sense. All it takes is one to try and get you the window. So big things on the horizon for us, Payne, but for folks that want to keep tabs,
BetTheBoard.net, BetTheBoardPodcast.com. I mean, I think we bought like 87 URLs.
I mean, I think we have everyone under the sun. And of course, if they want to follow the podcast on Twitter, @BetTheBoardPod there. We'll figure out the upcoming NBA playoff schedule. And like I said, some other major announcements that we want to keep under wraps. So if you didn't have incentive enough already to follow us on Twitter, now you do. Of course, you can follow Dave Mason, who comes on with us on a pretty regular basis at Dave Mason BOL. Take advantage of some of those great promotions that BetOnline is offering for our Bet the Board listeners. You can follow Payne on Twitter @PayneInsider. You can follow me on Twitter @ToddFurman. And Payne, before we let our listeners go to the window for the opening round of the NBA playoffs, anything that really tickles your fancy and is worth an investment, series or otherwise, my friend?
I will say this. We have not bet a game yet for Saturday or Sunday. If we do, I will give that out. However, we did bet one future, and I think a lot of people will be stunned by this. But if you've paid attention to the market, you've seen this move from about -140, and you said it was about a $2 favorite at BetOnline, I believe.
Yeah, $2 favorite right now at BetOnline. I think I know where you're going.
Yeah, I think that's probably the cutoff. There is, if you do your shopping, some -170 out there. And it was definitely available about an hour ago before we started recording. It's the Golden State Warriors. I just think it's really tough to guard these guys. And I'm saying the obvious, but this is a different makeup than having like three or four stars that we've seen teams kind of gravitate towards having. Who do you guard here is the problem. Like, you can't help off any of these guys. You just can't. It's like a different makeup. And Kevin Durant's come in here and he has been so efficient just knocking down shots. Everyone is only getting single teams. Like, over a 7-game series, I think that presents some value here. Like, this, to me, this number is closer and really should be a $4 or $5 favorite. And I think we've kind of, you know, Kevin Durant goes down and we've kind of made this case. And it scares me because we've seen LeBron at that next level and we've seen LeBron kind of just bully this team, literally just, you know, smack them around and just be more physical. But I think there's just too much here, and it's stating the obvious, but I don't think the obvious is priced properly. I really think they should be about a $4 favorite here.
That's the name of the game, favorite or underdog. If we feel that something is over or undervalued in the market, we're going to take full advantage.
Very similar situation, and not to, you know, I know BetOnline put out those early odds on, like, Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor, and, you know, 20-1 isn't enough. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's that same. It's that same philosophy. Like, I have no problem, like, for a week's investment or 2 weeks investment or 3 weeks investment, you know, making 10, 15, 20% on my money. Like, it's just not a problem for me. That's how I look at this. So I have no problem laying $2 on something like this. and you even try to like think about the numbers here, even if they made it to the finals and got down and lost game one at home, like you're still looking at roughly the same price for the series price. Like we've seen this before, and they're just much better now. Like, you know, Kevin Durant with the leg injury, like I don't love the leg injuries, but he seems to be perfectly fine. He doesn't seem to be out of gas, doesn't seem to be winded. He came back in, they've thrown him into the fire, played 30 minutes three times. So I think we're okay there. I just think there's just too much value on this to pass up. I really do.
You read my mind, asking what we could project out if the chalk does end up meeting for the third straight season before crowning an NBA champion. But you heard it here first. Golden State, even if they were to lose game one at home, you're probably talking about a very similar number. Yeah. So, yep, get yourself to the window. Golden State Warriors, sometimes betting favorites does pay. And as Payne mentioned, $2 the price right now at BetOnline. But if you shop around, there are some more advantageous numbers. You might be able to save yourself 25 or 30 cents. For Payne Insider, the NBA guru that he is, of course, like we said, we'll announce
didn't come
a
off
bit
like
more.
That today.
You know what? We just tried. There's a lot to cover.
Yeah.
There's a lot to cover, and you know you're gonna have
you
other chances to
me
showcase.
Up. You softened me up to do this. This was a lot of legwork from you.
I mean, we're gonna get that in-depth knowledge that you have maybe before we get into the conference semifinals and deeper into the NBA, where you have to fill more airtime instead of me just throwing out numbers, pretending like I've paid attention to the NBA all season. I will say one thing, Payne, though, for folks that are listening that maybe want a little bit of a live underdog, since folks are asking why no love for the Stanley Cup playoffs in a podcast there. I think you can make a lot worse investments come Friday night than backing the San Jose Sharks as a live underdog at plus $1.25 to take the first two games of the series at Edmonton. So, go ahead.
Just gave something out there.
I mean, hey, don't tell me I haven't given anything out. I've given out some stuff during we gave stuff out during college basketball. I mean, I know it is your time to shine, which means Edmonton wins this game 4-1, so maybe it provides fade bait.
I like you, you know, stepping up to the plate and taking a hack. There you go.
We can give folks a little bit of nugget to keep themselves entertained.
I have to actually bet this now. I have a philosophy about not giving out stuff I don't bet. So now you force me to bet a damn hockey game that I'm going to have to now watch.
Well, I mean, I did give it out, so I've already bet it. So you technically don't have to bet it if you don't want.
I got to have a little skin in the game if our listeners
do. When is tonight? 10:35 Eastern. You'll be fast asleep by the end of the first period.
San Jose, is this, what game is this? This is game two.
This is game two. San Jose won game one, 3-2. And this takes on a very similar tenor to what I saw last year where San Jose went on the road, beat the Kings the first two games, and they were a little bit underpriced. I think they're the better team top to bottom. When you talk about playoff pedigree, they've been there, done that, and I think we saw some of the pressure on a young upstart Oilers team start to make them crack. Oftentimes, playing at home can be more troublesome than being on the road where your own fans aren't rooting against you.
Do I get a refund if this loses?
Yeah.
Do I get
IOU? And we can get you an IOU. We can redeem it later for NASCAR, whether Xfinity, trucks, or Cup. We'll find a way to try and get you to the window with an investment.
That's an IOU, my friend. Those are as good as cash.
Nothing better than closing out our first NBA playoff podcast here for Bet the Board with lines from Dumb and Dumber. Thanks, everybody, for listening. As I said, you can follow Payne on Twitter, at Payne Insider. Follow me there, at Todd Furman. Of course, Dave Mason, at Dave Mason BOL. The podcast, at Bet the Board Pod. Visit bettheboardpod.com. We'll have some interesting content up there for you early next week. And before I continue to ramble, hopefully we'll see you at the window with some NBA playoff winners come next week.